From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, a Civil War story of Texans who fought for the Union. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. In 1861, Texas seceded from the United States and joined the Confederate States of America, a breakaway republic formed to preserve the enslavement of people. On April 16, 1862, Confederate Vice President Alexander Stephens delivered a speech where he described the government's ideology as based, quote, upon the great truth that the Negro was not equal to the white man, that slavery, subordination to the superior race, is his natural and normal condition. There were those in the Confederacy who disagreed with this view, including Francis Ashbury Vaughn, a Seguin, Texas resident, along with 11 of his compatriots, elected as a matter of conscience to leave Texas and fight on the side of the Union Army. Estimates suggest that around 100,000 Southerners fought for the Union during the Civil War. These men are known as Southern Unionists. Their stories highlight the complexity of the Civil War. Their contributions were often overshadowed by the larger Confederate narrative, but recent scholarship is bringing more attention to their role, which is why the Francis Ashbury Vaughn story is so compelling. Vaughn maintained a detailed diary that documented his dangerous journey to enlist in the Union Army, as well as his exploits during the war. Wayne Stewart, Vaughn's great-great-grandson, has written a book based on the diary, Generations of Texas, 10 Generations of Texas Family History.
Once I retired, I started doing a little writing and got fascinated by the family stories. And that's what got me to this point.
Fortunate for you, though, you had a treasure trove of documents. So tell me about how you came to possess the documents that one day would provide the narrative that you tell.
My mother's heritage runs through Seguin, Texas, and it goes back, for me at least, seven generations. Two of her aunts and my mother teamed up to gather up all the family history they could, and there were thousands of documents and photographs and stories and even a diary that we'll talk about a little bit later, I suppose. When my mother died, all of this passed to me, which was a little bit before I retired from work, but I began sorting out all of these boxes and boxes of materials and realized there was a family history here that might have interest for some people, that didn't know much about the 1800s in Central Texas.
But even beyond that, I mean, you have ancestors that fought in the American Revolution.
That's true. Actually, my family, direct family records go back to, in one case, the 1600s, one branch, another two cases, the 1700s, the early part, had at least three ancestors who fought in the Revolutionary War on the side of the Americans. And after the Revolutionary War, they began moving westward. We have records of starting in South Carolina, moving to Tennessee, from Tennessee to Mississippi, from Mississippi to Texas, and that all occurred over about a century. It's interesting to me that these various families were so intent on moving westward. I feel sure the lure of free land, maybe additional opportunity, who knows what all the reasons were, but they left. They would pack up and take the entire family with them to a new place hundreds of miles away. That part was very fascinating.
So you were able to focus in on the Vaughn part of your lineage. Tell me about the Vaughns.
Okay, the Vaughns came originally from England. They landed just around 1700. And where I really have good information begins when they were in Tennessee. And that was in the early 1800s. From there, the family, they kept their land in Tennessee, their farmers, and moved to Mississippi, where they formed a very large farming and mercantile company. They were there from the 18, roughly 1815 through 1850, when about two-thirds of the family packed up and moved to Texas. They arrived in 1850, a small town called Prairie Lee, which is about 20 some odd miles out of Seguin, if you know where that is. And that's where they set up their farming operations. And I will tell you that they were slaveholders at the time, as were many people in this part of the country. That didn't last all that long, but they depended on slave labor in addition to their own.
So I also want to hit pause and just refer back to you had kin in the Texas Revolution against Mexico who were executed.
Correct.
Just talk about that because that's important history.
So 1850 was not the first time that this family came to Texas. In 1812, Grandpa Higginbotham, one batch or branch of the family, actually came with a number of his buddies to Texas to buy mules. While here, they were attacked by Indians, and all but one of the party were killed by Indians. That one that survived took 2 years to get back to their home in Tennessee. By that time, his wife had remarried, and he was kind of on his own. But that was our first venture, 1812. In 1835, two brothers of Francis Asbury Vaughan, who is my great-great-grandfather, we'll talk about him in a minute, older brothers, responded to the call to come to Texas and fight in the Mexican Revolution. They arrived in New Orleans on the last day of 1835 and joined up with a group going to Texas to fight in the Texas Revolution. They arrived in early January and joined up with Fannin's army. Now, if you know your Texas history, Fannin's army was ill-fated. They fought several battles with Mexicans and generally won. And the final battle they fought, they surrendered to a General Urrea. He gave them good terms, which were overruled by Santa Anna. Santa Anna proclaimed all of them to be pirates. All of Fannin's army marched them to Goliad and executed virtually the entire army. And so two of those ancestors, have their names on the wall as executed at Goliad.
James and William Vaughan.
James and William, the first and third sons of George Vaughan, who was had 14 children. My direct great great grandfather was the 13th of those 14. So he by then being that much younger, didn't really know those older brothers all that well. They came to Texas in 1850, as I said. They settled in Prairie Lee. When Texas seceded from the Union and joined the Confederacy, Francis Asbury Vaughan, who was my great-great-grandfather, he and a number of his fellows suffered under the Confederate rule and decided they could not fight for the Confederacy. So a dozen of them on July the 1st, 1862, July the 4th of 62, they decided to go join the Union Army.
So can you
This
talk
is
about
just
why that is such a big decision, what they had to weigh, just deciding to, I'm going to go fight for the Union, and I'm in Texas at the time. What were they facing?
okay. Well, first off, the family pressures were enormous. Two of his brothers fought for the Confederacy, one older and one younger. Probably a half dozen of his cousins from various branches of the family, they all joined the Confederacy. He was the only one that determined to go fight for the Union. At the time, Texas passed a conscription law, which said that all able-bodied men would enlist in and fight for the Confederacy. And Confederate patrols were very vigorous in tracking down people who looked like they were fighting-age men, challenged them. If they were not signed up to fight for the Confederacy, they were given two choices: either join on the spot or be executed. And there are a number of examples of that. I won't go into the details, but on both sides of the state, groups of Texans who refused to join the Confederacy were either hanged or shot. So it
Weird. So
was
people
a
can Google the Great Hanging of Gainesville if they're looking for more reference.
exactly right, and that's probably the most famous of the those events. They determined, these dozen men determined to go south from Prairie Lee, across Texas into Mexico. They have documented at least 8 or 10, I'll say eight, at least, places where they actually bumped into Confederate patrols, and in a little later on, Mexican army, as they attempted to leave Texas. The Confederate army actually pursued them down into Mexico, as they then crossed Mexico to Matamoros, which was the closest seaport that they could get to.
Yeah, and I just
There.
want to mention that Matamoros was very much aligned with the Confederacy. That was a route to ship cotton bales to Britain during the war to finance the Confederacy. And also northern Mexico saw the Civil War in a different sort of terms, but it seemed to align with their regionalism versus the federalism of Mexico, so they were sympathetic to the Confederacy at the time.
It's interesting. Mexico was a bit of a dichotomy because they were very anti-slavery, but there were also a great number of Confederate sympathizers, and so as my great-grandfather traversed Mexico, he was never sure what he was going to run into at the next Mexican town. Once at Matamoros, by the way, they had picked up additional men who are traveling the same route. So by the time they got close to Matamoros, they were up in the dozens. They found a ship to take them to New Orleans. New Orleans was the closest port with a Union encampment at close around New Orleans and Fort Jackson. While he was gone almost 4 years. And to my knowledge, he had no communication with his family during that time. According to family documentation, the last thing he did before he left to join the Union Army was he freed his slaves and offered them lifetime employment if they would stay. And most of them did. In fact, I have a photograph from 1894 of the entire family outside a house, their house, and two of the former slaves. What would that be? That'd be 30 years later. Were standing in front of the house alongside the family holding babies. So, at least two of the former slaves stayed with the family.
Do we know why your ancestor, your great great grandfather, why he decided? What was his reasoning that he was going to do this dangerous trip that could cost him his life? He could end up on the wrong end of a rope. Why did he do this?
The source of much of what I discuss in my book is a diary that my great-great-grandfather penned of his travels to go to find the Union Army and join them. And then the first several months of his service in the Civil War. And I've been asked a number of times, why would he, given that his family was so strongly Confederate in nature and in economy, why would he choose to fight for the Union? And here is all I know for sure. These are his words from November of 1862. Quote, "So here we are drilling." This is after he had joined the Union Army. "Drilling every day, prepare for action to defend our families and our homes and our country from the ruthless hands of the rebels who would sink the country with the honest part of community to the depths of perdition for the sake of establishing an aristocratic government."
Yeah, what does that mean to you?
He spent a year after Texas seceded responding to the heavy burden of the Confederacy and the Confederate government of Texas and of the entire Confederacy. And I believe he got to a point of saying, "I can't tolerate this. I'm losing my freedom. My family is oppressed, and we are fighting for something that I guess I really just don't believe in." And I'm referring now to slavery. That's all I know. That quote is the only thing he left me that enlightens me on that point. But that kind of motivated his decision to take all these risks and go join the Union Army.
So when he joined up after escaping Texas, getting through Mexico, getting aboard his ship, going to near New Orleans, they were able to join up. And so what was that like?
The group he was with, they actually traveled in two different ships, separated by about a month and a half. The reason it's so long was that the second group actually got in trouble with Mexican authorities and were thrown in jail for 2 weeks. When they were finally released, they went immediately to find a ship to go to New Orleans. New Orleans was one of the only places in the South that was in federal hands, and the reason for that is Fort Jackson guards the mouth of the Mississippi River, and upstream from that, 20 miles or so, is New Orleans. And New Orleans and Fort Jackson were Union outposts in the Confederacy. They arrived and were inducted into the Union Army. We have a lot of documentation on all that. Back then, they elected their officers. So they joined the 1st Texas Cavalry of the Union Army. I've been told by several folks that should know better. There was no 1st Texas Cavalry in the Union Army, but I promise you there was, and my great-great-grandfather was in it. He ran for lieutenant and lost by 2 votes. He then ran for 1st Sergeant and was elected. He spent time as sergeant and then quartermaster, and then was promoted to lieutenant. He served under Edmund J. Davis, who had been a judge in Texas, who escaped Texas and traveled to Washington, D.C. He met with Abraham Lincoln and asked for a commission to go to Texas, back to Texas, form the 1st Texas Cavalry and fight through his way through Texas. Davis was the commanding officer. He did exactly what Lincoln asked him to do. By the end of the war, he was a general, and my great-great-grandfather was actually his aide-de-camp. He was promoted all the way up to captain, and following the war, both Davis and and Asbury returned to Texas, where Davis was elected governor and led the constitutional conventions that resulted in Texas being readmitted to the Union. Asbury was a mentee. Davis was his mentor for many years, and then his time in Texas after the Civil War was highlighted by a number of government positions, including inspector at the border, customs inspector. He was the mayor of Seguin for a while, and was a very prominent citizen, leading to his death in 1896. This story came down through the family, was one that just intrigued me. And as I got into all of the documentation and the diary, which I still have, I decided I needed to write the story. I went at one point a few years ago down to Austin and met with one of the curators at the Bullock, Texas Museum. And he liked the story so much they made an exhibit out of it for 2 years, and it was selected as one of the most influential exhibits of the first 10 years of that museum's history.
So when people tell you that you're mistaken, there is no such thing as a Union Texas cavalry, why do you think they have that impression, or why do they hang on to something like that? Do they come at you with a chip on their shoulder when they tell you that?
You run into some historians that are that way. This particular fellow that I'm referring to was a curator at a museum. And I said, well, I'm sorry, you believe that because Texas was a Confederate state. But there were also some 20,000 Texans who joined the Union armies and, you know, fought on the side of the Union. And he said, no, that's not true. Well, he came back to me about a month later, and he said, I apologize, you are exactly right. And he had found all the documentation that I referred to earlier about Edmund J. Davis and how he formed the first Texas Cavalry. They actually fought in about a dozen engagements all across Texas, mostly the southern part. I don't know for sure how many of those my great-great-grandfather personally participated in. But I do know that right at the end of the war, he was in Matamoros, which was where he got his promotion to captain and commander of Company F in 1st Texas Cavalry. He was mustered out in 1864, returned home after being gone 3 years.
Yeah, Brownsville was fought over. It changed hands a few times during the Civil War.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was a number of times.
And other states in the South, I know Alabama had people who also fought for the Union as well. They had quite a Union force. It does seem to be glazed over and not talked about that there were many, many people in the South who wanted to protect the Union, and they wanted to, on ethical grounds, moral grounds, felt that keeping people enslaved was a wrong that needed to be addressed, and they were willing to put their lives on the line to do it.
Yeah, that's true. And you don't hear those stories all that often, do you?
No, which is why this story is so important. So April in the South is Confederate History Month, and some people have lobbied to say, can we change it to from Confederate History Month to just Civil War History Month so that we can talk about both sides of what happened during the terrible war? Do you have any thoughts on that?
And my flippant answer is I would rather have it discussed as the Civil War history, mainly because that title avoids some of the knee-jerk reaction that a lot of people have to Confederacy or the Confederate Army or something. Because, to your point, there were a lot of good men and families who suffered on both sides of that war. So I guess I would say if we can preserve the history in a way that doesn't stir up so much immediate knee-jerk reaction, I guess I would be for that.
What does it mean to you to learn that you have ancestors who fought on both sides of the war, but to hear about what Captain Vaughn did, Francis Vaughn? That's your blood. That's your DNA. That's your makeup. I mean, what do you think about that?
I have not been asked that question before, but I will respond this way. Number one, I am absolutely thrilled to have the documentation that my family preserved for me. I feel quite sure they would be very pleased to have this story come forward. Number two, I would say I'm vehemently opposed to slavery and to that part of our history, but you can't bury it. You can't. You have to understand it. You have to address it properly. So I love the fact that my great-great-grandfather did what he did. I greatly enjoy his diary and, you know, reading about his activities. His reception back in the Seguin area was evidently not disagreeable at all. He came back and was elected to a number of public offices and appointed to Texas government positions, and then elected mayor. So I think somehow the healing took place either fairly quickly or maybe because of the personalities involved. Maybe people recognized that the family had been split completely by that war. I have a humorous little aside.
Yeah.
Governor Davis was disliked as a governor greatly, but he accomplished the Constitutional Convention and got us readmitted to the Union. He was then thoroughly defeated by Richard Koch for the next governor's term. It's interesting to know that Edmund Davis, while he was governor, appointed my great-great-grandfather, Asbury Vaughn, to be a colonel in the Texas militia. Now, that's interesting because when Davis was not reelected, he refused to leave the governor's mansion and give up the role to Richard Koch. Koch called out the Texas militia to have Davis removed from the mansion. Now, I have no evidence of this, but wouldn't it have been interesting to see my great-grandfather show up and say, you know, General Davis, you have to leave now.
I mean, it was quite the showdown in the governor's office. Didn't actually remove him physically?
I think they did.
So
there's an interesting crossover there and my wife's maiden name was Koch, and her great uncle was Richard Koch. So the documentation on my side matching up with the documentation on my wife's side, we actually have a fairly good recount of the history of the post-Civil War era.
Wayne Stewart is the author of Generations of Texas, 10 Generations of Texas Family History, which tells the story of Francis Asbury Vaughn, one of many Texans who fought for the Union during the Civil War. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. There are past episodes of Texas Matters on our website at tpr.org, and you can download and subscribe to us wherever you find cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.